So a couple weeks ago when we had a snow day, I was, well, Chris was very down laden with homework and college work. And so when the sister Lucky were going to Findlay, they asked if one of us would take it. So it was going to be me. And then we had a snow day. So I was like, whoo, hooray. And then I thought I was going to get out of it completely. And we had the activity on Saturday night. And again, Chris was doing homework. So somehow it was me again. So I thought, okay, that's my turn. I'm done. And our speaker didn't make it tonight because they got somebody sick. And I'm like, oh no, I thought I was done. So apparently this is supposed to be brought for some reason. So this was something I had just started thinking about. And so when they had asked, I kind of knew that this would be something that maybe I put together as a message about. And I want to talk a little bit about who am I. And then like right after that, Brother Jeremy talked about who am I on Wednesday night. So I thought I really was getting out of this, but no such luck. So in Mark 14, and I'm not going to read it all, I'll just kind of hit some highlights of the verses and what they're talking about. It's Jesus preparing for the Passover, and knowing what's coming ahead. And so, and I also want to keep in mind that Jesus was in the human flesh just like us. And even though he knew what was coming, he knew what his mission was going to be, which we don't know our mission and our future. He did know that. So he's preparing for the Passover. He's knowing that he's going to the Garden of Gethsemane with the disciples, who are actually going to, you know, one's going to betray him. A lot of them are going to desert him, knowing this information. Knowing that Peter, who was adamant that he was going to be with him to death, was going to deny him three times. And Peter even saying, if I should die with thee, I'm not going to deny thee in any wise. And Jesus said, you will, and three times, not just once. Jesus was exceedingly sorrowful in his soul, and he asked Peter, James, and John to tarry with him. We went to pray. We've been talking in Sunday school about this, about prayer with our girls. And so I'm with Sister Becky right now. We're doing combined class. And she was talking about how Jesus prayed so hard that his sweat turned to blood. And I don't know. I mean, I think we've prayed pretty hard about things in our life sometimes, some situations that we really want to answer to. I don't know of anybody that's ever prayed so hard that your sweat actually turned into blood. So he knew what his mission was going to be, and he had no desire to do it, and especially since, and I do not blame him. I would have no desire to do it. And he was exceedingly sorrowful, and he asked, you know, his three disciples to go up with him. This is a heavy burden. Can you be here with me? And he comes back, and he finds them asleep. And I thought, how horrible would it be if we had a really heavy burden, and I asked someone to pray with me, and they're like, well, okay, will you pray with me? And then they fall asleep while we're praying. That would be really discouraging. And this happened three times. He came back. You couldn't tarry with me just an hour, just a little bit. And they were so tired. We skipped down to verse 50, and it said, all forsook him and fled. So all of them was with him. He was now alone. And then we get down to verse 57 and 58. They begin fearing false witness against him. And then in verse 60 and 61, which is kind of what kind of triggered some of this thoughts, is just marveled to no end, is Jesus held his peace and answered nothing. In verse 65, they spat on him, they covered his face, you know, who hit you, mocking him, striking him with their palms. He was not being only accused by his own people, but they were also asking for him to be crucified, and Barabbas, this known criminal and murderer, to be released instead. And the Mark 15:5 says Jesus answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. And I would think that in any case of humans that would be going to court, any of this would be happening. We all would be saying something, right? We all would be pleading our case, our innocence. And if it wasn't innocent, we still would be, I'm sure, giving our opinion strongly against all of these things happening to us. And he answered nothing. He was mocked, he was spat upon, he was beaten, he was humiliated, and if that wasn't enough, he was forced to carry his own cross. So knowing you're going to be crucified, then just add insult to injury, you're going to carry your own cross when you can barely stand up. And it said, when I did some studying, for 2,000 feet, he carried it before they pressed Simon of Cyrene to help him carry it up the hill to Golgotha. So he still carried it quite a ways, and again, said nothing. And so verse 29 and 30, in his most excruciating moment, his dying, there was one still mocking him. Still at the cross, if you're Jesus, then why don't you just call down those angels? Why don't you just, you know, get off that cross? If you can build a temple in 3 days and destroy it, get down off that cross. Still mocking him. At the foot of the cross, casting lots for his clothes, the only thing he had left in this world, the only possession he had left was his clothes. And they're gambling for his clothes. Verse 34, he then cries out, "My God, why hast thou forsaken me?" He was now carrying the sins of the world, the past, the present, and the future. And in the present, there's a lot of sins of the world. In the past, there was a lot of sins, and we don't even know what the future holds. That's going to be, our minds can't even just grasp the concept of the load that was on his back. And Matthew 26:53 said, Jesus said he could call more than 12 legions. That is 80,000 angels. I think 80,000 angels would make a statement. I think he would be able to just be taken away. So when I was doing some of the study, I like to think sometimes when I'm reading some of these stories, I know the Bible doesn't go into a lot of their detail. And I know sometimes we're detail people. A lot of people like to blog every detail. We don't need to know every detail. But the Bible just doesn't give a lot. So I kind of like to think sometimes about these people. They're human just like us. So like, what was running through like Mary's mind when an angel appeared to her and tell her she's going to carry the Son of God? What was running through David's mind when he says, I'm going to take on this giant out here and I got a slingshot and a little stone? And what was going through Moses' mind when he sees this big sea, he sees this army coming behind him, and he's going to pray and he's going to have faith that something's going to happen. And they're going to walk through on dry land. And I just, wow. I mean, it blows my mind. What was Esther thinking when she was taken from her people captive, and then she went from a captive to queen? So, I mean, all of these individual human beings, they're just like you and me. And they have anxieties and nervousness and fears. And I'm sure that these stories, wow. I mean, my anxieties are nothing compared to that. I'd probably be rocking in the corner somewhere if that happened to anybody. That's a lot. And all of these things came to them as in human form. And so it says, Jesus came to us in human form and was tempted as we are. And so I think about all the things in the world going on today that just seem impossible. I mean, there's corruption that seems impossible to ever root out. There is just people that are so full of hate, it seems impossible to change them. There's just so many things that seem impossible. This coronavirus sometimes seems impossible that we're ever going to get back to a normal sense of the being. And we're in things that we've never done before. Like, we've never been in a pandemic before. Well, not our generation. I think there's the swine flu or some kind of flu way back. They had one. But we've never been in one. And we've never had, like, school days and then e-learning days and then snow days, which are learning at home. So all of this is just all new for us. And then we've not had, ever that I've known of, a time that we've not been able to go to church for several months. So we had to worship online, and then we would have to be isolated from people when we're used to being around people and wear masks and do all that we're supposed to, you know, do to keep things at bay here. So it's a difficult time. And you add to that, and I know I'm not on social media near what I know a lot of people are, and I get really discouraged when I get on social media. I just kind of have to take a little cleanse from it from time to time. But you add to that, we had an election year that was very, very, what's the word? Debates and lots of opinions. There was racial disputes, racism. It's got people riled up. And it doesn't help that we've been cooped up. That really riles people up. They're already just mad about everything at the world. And so a social media platform that's been used to share things has now become a platform for rants and fighting and opinions. And it's really discouraging and upsetting sometimes if you see some people that are like, okay, I really thought this was a good person, and they're just lashing out like nobody's business. And you're like, wow. And so you just kind of want to go through and just like, let's block and delete and purge. Well, I think about Christ. He had all that happening to him, and he wasn't able to block and delete and purge. He had him still right there doing all these things to him. He can just say, I'm going to unfollow you because you hurt my feelings, right? He probably would have loved to. He probably would have like loved to have done that. And so I think, you know, sometimes we get all just, this is just the most horrible thing ever that's happened to me. And sometimes we have to put it in perspective. When you read some of these stories, you're like, okay. Let's take a breath. Who am I that I think that I have like the worst life ever? The things have just happened to me and I'm just falling apart. And, you know, all these different causes, people start taking up causes, you know, save the whales and save the babies. And then a lot of them are good causes. And some are really passionate about it. So they're driven. They do fundraisers. They do research. They travel. They do things. And they're very driven by their passions. And some of them will get to the point where they make you feel bad because you're not as invested as they are. Or you don't see it the same way as them. Or, you know, and so again, we'll unfollow, block, whatever it is, because you don't share my opinion, we definitely can't be friends. And so I'm just wanting to bring to light here all the, right now there's just a lot of hatred, I feel like, fueled by the world. And it's just easy to just to get swept up in that and give an opinion and sometimes not have an opinion and then you come out with one. And it starts to weigh on you, and that's evil corruption. It's not able to be stopped, and then our flesh wants to get riled up, and we're going to just take care of things. We've never really been able in our flesh to conquer too much, so I don't know why we think we can, but we're just going to take care of things here. And so in our mind, if people's going to say that and they're going to act like that, then we're going to show them. I will show them you're not going to treat me like that. Whether if I engage with you and have this, you know, 2-page-long fight that everybody in the world's reading that thinks, oh, okay. Or I just delete you and I just show you, because I'm not going to be a friend anymore. We get so riled up that we're gonna show them. And then I thought about Christ. He uttered not a word. And people on social media today cannot. There are posts I see people put out there just intentionally waiting on the comments to come, and they come, and they can't refrain. They just can't refrain from saying something. And Jesus uttered not a word. And these are people that are just posting an opinion about the weather or, you know, whatever's going on in the world. This was accusations in Christ that was not true, that was leading him to his death. If any time that you're going to defend yourself would be then, I would think. He knew he was God's son. So if you come up to me and say, Sister Cummings is not your mother, I'm going to say, you're crazy. I know she's my mother. I lived in that house for many years. And we won't say how many years. I forget how old I am. I just try to forget that. But I've lived there many years. I know that was my mother. So if you try to convince me it was not my mother, I would be like, something is wrong with you. And I would probably engage with you a little bit to try to convince you that I have pictures, I have proof, that's my mother, right? Well, here's Jesus, and they're telling him, you're blaspheming, you're not the Son of God. He's like, now hold on. I know I'm the Son of God. I know who my Father is. But he did not say that. He said not a word. And, you know, a lot of times when we was kind of get off a little bit here at work, when we emails got us in trouble at work sometimes, because you can't read the tone or what you're saying to someone through an email. So we would always get called in meetings and say, know your audience. When you're sending something, know your audience. If it's someone that's going to not read it well, it's going to cause problems. Know your audience. And so I think here, Christ knew his audience. They are not going to receive what he said anyway. Why engage, right? He knew what his future held, and that, I think, in itself was hard enough to know, and that probably was what brought the sweat and the blood, knowing where you're going. I mean, we don't know where we're going, and we have to face, and we've had some troubles and trials and situations we get through in our past, and we're like, ooh, if I would have known about that, I would have done everything possible to avoid that, right? To not go through that. And I've said that before some things. I'm like, if I could have went back, I would have ran that way and missed this whole situation. And Christ knew what he was headed to and still uttered not a word. He knew that he was going to be humiliated and he was going to take a beating. He knew he was going to the cross. He knew everyone that was close to him was going to desert him. Everyone that was dear to him, that labored in the work of God with him, was going to desert him. And he still uttered not a word. How? It just blows my mind. How? I know he was Christ, but he was in the human form. The accusations, the lies, the untrue, the horrible things that was just said about him today would start a civil war, you know, let alone the actual physical things that happened to him. And he even, when he went into Pilate, and, you know, Pilate's asking him, are you going to plead your case? You know, here's your opportunity. Nothing. Not even in front of Pilate. When he was being nailed to the cross, which was the worst pain to endure, he still uttered not a word. And I did some research, and I won't share it with you because I made Chris a little queasy reading it to him, so there might be some faint of stomachs in here, and I don't want to have any of that happen. But if you have the stamina for it, go do some research on it. So Dracarian doesn't even get into all the particulars. And one article I read, I was like, oh my goodness. And I will say the one part was like, it was talking about when you hit the nerves and your hand goes numb. And I think, you know, sometimes if I sleep wrong and my hand's numb, it just upsets my whole morning, right? Like, I'm trying to get it shake and I'm trying to rub it. I'm trying to get it. Well, you can't rub it if your other hand's over here nailed to the cross. And that's just one of your problems, right? We've got shooting pain and excruciating things going on. And as I read this and tried to share with Chris, it wasn't going well. But it's very powerful, and it kind of brings into perspective. I think almost I needed to read it because it brings into perspective. You know, we hear the story, nailed to the cross. We're like, okay. But when you break it down, what it all meant, what the details of it was, it's so much more intense. And what a sacrifice, and how much we take for granted, and how much we just aren't appreciative of it. And it's, I think it's definitely worth your time if you can handle that. I lost my place here. So why did Christ not utter a word? It wasn't because he was guilty or deserving. And even if you would go to court or watch some of these people's courts or whatever on videos, even if they're guilty, they're still fighting their cause right up till it's proved that they're not. You know, here's evidence. Oh, yeah, okay, it was me. Right? But they're just adamant. And so it wasn't even because he was guilty. It wasn't because he was deserving. But it was for the plan of salvation for you and me. It wasn't for political gain. He wasn't doing it to gain some kind of position. Actually, he got nothing out of it. He did it as a gift of eternal life for us. There was nothing that Christ was getting out of this, especially physically, except for to create a way for us to go to heaven. And knowing all of this time that he could call down 80,000 angels. He was human, just like us. I couldn't have endured that. I don't know about you, but I could not have endured that. Then ourselves, we would have said, game over. I'm not playing no more, right? You hurt my feelings. You made me mad. You called me names. I'm done. Christ, take me, or God, take me back home. I'm done. I'm not doing this for them. They don't appreciate it. I would not have done it. I don't think I would have done it to endure. No, I know. I would have done it to save myself, because I don't like pain a lot. And let alone the sins of the whole world. And to do it for someone that's not even going to appreciate it. I mean, we do things today, we want some thanks, right? I'm going to do, and even growing up, mom would do that. You know, she'd get a gift, and if we weren't thankful, she'd be like, well, then see if I do it for you again. Oh, wait, thanks, right? Oh, I love you. You know, we want to tell her we're appreciative because we want it to happen again. But if you keep giving someone a gift and they keep, you know, spitting on you, are you going to keep giving them a gift? We're done, right? We're done. But he did this and still kept going. And this is a love that cannot be fathomed. It cannot be comprehended. Right. And that's why it's called agape love. We think that in our human minds, yes, a great love that God did. And then you start reading some of this and you're like, my mind is blown. I cannot fathom how I could personally, in Christ's shoes, endure any of this. And knowing what I was headed for. This is more than loving your neighbor as yourself. That's more, you know, we love our neighbors, we have compassion, we have friends, this is way more than that. It's more than giving your life for a friend, and there are some very heroic stories of people that have given their life for their friend or for their children. And this is way more than that. It's a love that goes past the testing, furthest testing point that any mankind could put on it. It's a love that goes way farther than that. So, who am I? Just as Brother Jeremy brought that really wonderful message the other night about the solar system, we're just a speck, right? We're like a grain of sand just out there in the vastness, just even on Earth. Then we take into the solar systems, we're just billions and billions of people. And who are we? We're just a little speck. We have no royal bloodline, most of us. There might be somebody who have some hidden secrets, but we have no royal bloodline. We're not a child of a legend, country singer, or a movie star, or I don't know anybody famous in here incognito. We're not a wealthy heir that have billions in coming to us. We're not have any line of power, you know, like the kings. We're not a prince or a princess. You know, we don't have a line of power or prestige. So who am I that a king should bleed and die for. And I know I gave a lesson a little bit and touched on this a little bit when we did our activity the other night about how God has no favorites. So even the one of royal of bloodline and me, there's no favorites. God did it all for us, for one and the same. So who am I? God sent his only son. And we've talked about this quite a bit here lately with our little one. We're like, okay, we may not get another one because we're old. We'll just put it that way. And he's a lot. So I thought, and we've talked about, what if he, our only son, decided that he's going to just say later, Mom, and just not have anything to do with us? That would hurt so much. But that if I gave my son to be sacrificed for a world that didn't even ask or appreciate that gift, that is hard to imagine and utter not a word. And know that your dad is giving you as a sacrifice. We're in a world where everyone wants their voice and opinion to be heard. We think it's going to change something for some reason, but we want to be heard. And Christ uttered not a word. So that brings all of the current world situations to a new perspective. First of all, he's still God. And thank the Lord for that, right? He's still God. He's way above all of this. We're just a speck. He's still in control. So when we think things have just spiraled out of control, people have spiraled out of control, he's still in control. He gave us the ultimate example of love and how to show love. So I don't think that any of us are going to be sent to a cross to be crucified. Could we show more love in our life? That was definitely an act of love. And so kind of like my New Year's resolution this year has kind of been to have more compassion and more love for people. And instead of you just automatically just assume and get irate and oh, that person, they're just so dumb, they're so irritable, why would they do that? Just to be more compassionate with people. I mean, if Christ can do that, I think I could handle that. I should be able to handle that. Could we not utter a word? Oh, that's a hard one, right? So especially if we're right, we want to definitely let people know we're right. And siblings, it's really, my younger brother and I always want to make sure I told him he was not right. When he was not right, I want to make sure he knew he was not right. And Mom will be like, let it go. But he's not right. And she's like, it doesn't matter. You're fighting and he's not going to take it. So just let it go. But you always feel like we need to let that person know. And he didn't need to know. I mean, he knew, but he didn't. It just caused more problems. We're in a world that's so wrong, so wicked, so hateful. So how can we show love? And so I think of the song we sang not too long ago. It says, who am I? It says, when I think of how he came so far from glory, came to dwell among the lowly such as I, to suffer shame and such disgrace, on Mount Calvary take my place, then I ask myself this question, who am I? When I'm reminded of his words, I'll leave you never. If you'll be true, I'll give to you life forever. Oh, I wonder what I could have done to deserve God's only son, to fight my battles until they're won. For who am I? Who am I that a king would bleed and die for? Who am I that he would pray, not my will, thine, Lord? The answer I may never know, why he ever loved me so, that to an old rugged cross he would go. For who am I? And so the early Christians who were persecuted and put to death, who am I that I cannot be more dedicated to God? We're not, thankfully, in that time. We may face that time where we're going to be persecuted and have to make more stands, but could we be more dedicated to God? The ones who are raised in horrible home situations, who am I? Can I not be a little more thankful and grateful and not just take for granted things I have? To those who have never heard a Bible story, who am I to be so blessed with so many Bibles in our home? We talked about that last night, the Bible study, and a time in the Revelation when you couldn't get a Bible unless you were highly educated. And now we have so many in our home. Who am I that we are so blessed? To Christ, who gave everything he had so we could have salvation. Who are we that we cannot give more of our time, our talents, our being? I'm not so privileged to be spoiled and expect a blessing. Give me, give me, give me. All right. It's a little hard to give to a child that says, give me, give me. We're working on that phase now. Give me that. Oh, how about please, right? Can I please? And how about thank you? Otherwise, it's no. So we're not so privileged and spoiled that we should be gimme, gimme, gimme. I'm God's child. I deserve all the wonderful roses and sunshine and rainbows, right? We are God's child. And we are, just like in our life with siblings, if one of them needs help, if one of them's sick, we help them, right? As much as they irritate us, if somebody's sick, or if they're going through a burden, or if they're having a hard time, if somebody's picking on them, we're there for them. And so we are all God's children, and you are all our siblings. We're all siblings of God's. And so we have some of God's children that are sick, and we have some that are burdened, and we have some that are carrying heavy loads. So God, help me to show more love, more empathy, more concern. Help me to reach out, send a card, send a text. Help me to carry the burden and pray for them. Help them carry their burden, because I may want them someday to help me carry my burden. So who am I? I'm a child of God. I'm a lowly servant, and I'm a vessel to be used. And I keep thinking back to Brother Burton's message. It was so good. We are not of this world. And it gets so hard because we're living and we've got jobs and we've got things we've got to do. So we're of this world. We're of this world. But we're not of this world. We're passing through. And so let's help me, I'm just kidding, if you say me, to not be so absorbed by the world and its problems, because they're not my problems. My home's here. My home's not here. And so help me not to be so absorbed that I can't show love, because I'm so consumed with everything that's like Chicken Little, the sky is falling. I'm so consumed with the sky is falling that I cannot see this one in need right here, or this one in need right here. No one is more powerful than God. And that's hard to think, because we think there's some people that just, you know, we think of a king as the ultimate power, or president, you know, I'm somewhat the ultimate power. And so we think there's no one that can ever change that. There's no one more powerful than God. There's no one in a higher position in the world. There's no one smarter. And there's no one stronger. So who am I that I should worry over things? I can't change people, but I can work on me. I can show a little bit more love and a little bit more kindness, and I can put into perspective with God. And I know Easter's coming soon, and so that as you can study on this, and when you get to the Easter Sunday, it'll just really bring that even more home, the impact of the gift of salvation. And it is a truly ultimate gift of God. That's it.
Amen.